And that wraps it up for another episode of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Miguel Gavilan Molina and Kevin Pina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Special thanks to producer and engineer Rod Akeel. For previous episodes, go to kpfa.org or flashpoints.net. For questions or comments, email dennis@kpfa.org. Thank you for listening.
Listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM and KBOO.FM online.
Times Like Now is an interview podcast with interesting people who are doing cool stuff. Past episodes can be heard wherever you get your audio programs. Sergio Garcia is the first undocumented immigrant to be admitted to the state bar, and he passed on his first try. My guest today on Times Like Now. Hello there, Sergio. Thank you so much for your time and for joining me on the program today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Trevor. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's very nice to speak with you. I've been reading a bit about your unique background and your unique story. How did you come to America and when?
Oh, sure. I'll be happy to share that. Well, the very first time I ever came to the U.S. was when I was 17 months old. My parents brought me here to Northern California at the time. Unfortunately, given their lack of resources and both financial and intellectual, you know, they brought me to this great country undocumented. And so that was my first experience here. And then after a while, they took me back to Mexico, ultimately bringing me back up here in 1994, roughly July of 1994 to be exact. And again, I did it while undocumented. And so that was something that was gonna kind of mark my future and mark my destiny, for better or worse, later on in my life. So that's kind of where my life starts. 1994, 17 years old, crossing the border in an irregular fashion.
Okay, so then you were going to high school in the States, in California.
That is correct. In 1994, when we got here, I was supposed to be in the last year of high school, but interestingly enough, when I tried to apply, or my parents tried to get me into Durham High School, which is up here again in Northern California, they said, well, you know, you come from Mexico, Mexican schools are not as good as ours, so you're going to have to redo your junior year. Which ironically, I had heard that in Mexico a few years back when I went there, and I had to redo a year in Mexico. So I wasn't happy about that at all, but because this was my second year that I was being held back, but I said, well, don't have much of a choice. I don't speak the language, and this is what they're offering me. So I guess I'll do my junior year here. And so that's what I did, ultimately graduating from Durham High School in 1996 with a 3.9 GPA.
Admirable. That's fantastic. Not that high school matters all that much, but you very quickly went to college to California State in Chico.
So after high school, Trevor, I actually got invitations from Berkeley, UC Davis, Stanford, and Chico State with full scholarships offers based on my grades. And unfortunately, at the time, I was still undocumented. And as soon as I disclosed that fact to these very fine institutions, they said, well, you know, we would still love to have you here, but you're going to have to pay out of pocket. Of course, for your listeners who are not aware, when you're undocumented, unfortunately, you cannot work in this country. And so the only thing I was doing at that time was dumpster diving for aluminum cans to try to make a buck, so that obviously there was no way that I could pay, you know, that kind of tuition for Berkeley, Stanford, or any of those institutions at the time.
Were you living without a home at the time? Were your parents here at the time?
Yeah, I was actually here with my parents. Our house, we did have a house, thankfully, but, you know, it was basically a wooden shack, placed smack in the middle of the main road and the railroad tracks that every time the train would go by, it would shake terribly. And I was always afraid that the train might derail one of those days and we might end up being run over by the train because it was so, so close to it.
That I can imagine. I can imagine that would be frightening. So fast forward, you began a process to be documented in approximately 94. You applied for that visa. And how long did it take? Because you've only recently gotten that visa, that card. How long exactly did that take you?
So that's correct. In order to adjust my status, it took 21 years. Which is an incredibly long time when you're undocumented and you're, you know, growing in the process, you know, becoming an adult, reaching the age of 18, wanting to get a driver's license and not being able to, wanting to get credit cards, you know, wanting to do the kinds of things that are a rite of passage for everybody else, like, you know, go out to the bars with your friends or whatever, and not being able to because you don't have an ID. So that whole process took 21 years. And in the interim, I was unable to go to any of those institutions that had been offered me a scholarship. So I went to Butte Community College for 4 years. After that, I went to Chico State University for a couple of years, where I published my first book at age 22. And then I used the funds I got from publishing a book to get myself into Cal Northern School of Law, because I always wanted to be an attorney back in this was back in 2005 when I started law school. I ultimately graduated from law school in 2009, took the California bar exam and passed it on my first attempt, just to find out that because of my lack of status, they were going to refuse me a license, which kind of opened this Pandora's box.
Okay, that's where we get up to a more modern time. But very quickly, let me back up. What inspired you to want to become a lawyer? When did that happen? And what, I guess, was the button that was pushed that turned that on for you to study law? That's a big hurdle.
Sure. Well, for me, frankly, it was my experience in Mexico, seeing the criminal justice system, how it operates in Mexico, and how it applies differently to people who are well off financially and poor people. Basically, the poor people end up in jail forever or until a family can sell everything and raise enough funds to get them out. And the people who are well off pretty much go in and out of jail. And I always thought that justice should be the same for everybody. So when I was a 10-year-old and I experienced that, I was, you know, there with torn shoes and an empty stomach, I, in my innocence or be naive, I said, oh, I'm going to grow up to be an attorney to change all this. I want to fight for the little guy, for the poor people, so they can get the same brand of justice that that everybody else gets. But, you know, of course, little did I know that life is not that easy.
Right. I was going to ask, you've had some kind of wake up call after all this time. So catching back up to 2014, that's when you were granted your green card. Is that correct?
So actually, my green card was given to me in 2015, May 20 of 2015.
15.
A year after I finally was able to defeat the United States Department of Justice, who opposed my licensing as an attorney. You know, I like I said, I passed the bar and finished law school, passed the bar on my first attempt in 2009. Spent almost 5 years fighting the U.S. Department of Justice. We were finally able to defeat them here at the California Supreme Court in 2014 and passed a brand new law here in California that allowed me to be licensed. I became licensed as our nation's first undocumented attorney on February 1st, 2014. And again, a year and a month later, pretty much, I finally got my green card, which it's kind of silly that we spent millions of dollars in 5 years fighting to ultimately just get a green card a year later anyway.
Yes, it seems like an incredible waste of time and efforts. But as the first undocumented to be given your bar exam, must have been a wonderful feeling inside. It must have been... describe that. What was that like, to be the first? Well, and are you the only? Are you still the only, or did you pave the way for others?
So at this point, I'm not the only one. I actually was kind of a catalyst for the entire country to kind of take notice and start changing the law after we passed the law here in California. Florida kind of took notice of it and did the same thing and started allowing people who were undocumented to be attorneys. Next was New York. And at this point, there's about 15 states in the nation that now allow undocumented people to practice law. And while it's still controversial, I think my life and my experience has probably shown that it's not the worst thing to do to give somebody an opportunity, as long as they're in the process of adjusting and they have tried to do everything they can to live by the rules. Unfortunately, sometimes it's beyond your control when this process takes 21 years.
Right, right. So you are now practicing at your own business.
That is correct.
And you're in Chico, correct? And you're personal injury attorney.
That is correct. Yes, a child. Like I said, I wanted to be a criminal defense attorney. Life would show me that was not the line of work for me. I got a little bit of experience in personal injury, and since when the U.S. Department of Justice left California, they said, oh, you can have your silly license, but you're still undocumented, so you cannot work for anybody. And the only experience I had was in personal injury, so I decided to kind of hang my shingle and do the, what I knew how to do. And luckily, in the last 7 years, I have built a multi-million-dollar practice. And, we started a foundation, and we're constantly trying to do good, good things for the community and help others and inspire everybody that is willing and interested in being inspired.
Yes, I ran across a quote of yours that I'd like to share. This was very inspiring, I think. It says, quote, "People say that you're so lucky, but it seems the harder I work, the luckier I get. Most people don't get that," unquote. That's very true, and rather after the hill that you've climbed and the work that you've done, admittedly, that's well deserved.
Well, Trevor, I have to tell you, even now, 7 years later, and financially, I no longer have to. I still put in 15 to 17 hour days, not all the time anymore. But I still do, often and more often than most people in my situation would probably like to do. But, I still do it. I still enjoy it. I love work. I love physical work. And, sometimes I go from home to from here to home and do landscaping or do whatever needs to be done around the house. So I don't think I'll ever stop working. I think my wife says I'm a workaholic, so.
Tell me a little bit about is this a nonprofit status organization?
Yes, back in 2012, we hired a friend of mine who was an attorney who specialized in corporations, and he was able to help me put together the Sergio C. Garcia Foundation. It's a 501c3 nonprofit. And through that, we have been able to do a lot of good work. We donated, I think, about $50,000 back in 2014 to some students in Oklahoma after a horrible earthquake hit their area and they were in need of some funding, and we did that. After that, we have helped individual students with, different needs, a couple thousand here and there for students who are struggling to stay in school. Just last year, the latter part of last year, we donated $10,000 in shoes to our local frontline workers, who were obviously working long, long hours and sometimes with not the most comfortable shoes. So we thought that was a nice gesture and to let them know we appreciate them and we're here taking notice of their hard work, and we're here to support them as they support us and being in the front lines. And currently we're actually doing a $20,000 giveaway in a little contest this month for the Hispanic Heritage Month.
That's fantastic. Tell me more. What is the requirements? What do people have to do to get to learn more?
So these are like the easiest $20,000 people can earn, or at least, you know, those who qualify can earn probably in the country. It's super easy. I'm basically publishing my book, my story in my own language, since I had already done that in English a few years back. I wanted to do it in Spanish for this particular Hispanic Heritage Month. I got it ready. I ordered my book, and I just thought about the fact that there has to be a bunch of incredible stories out there. Mine is by no means unique, and I know people come to this great country from all parts of the world and whatnot. So we're asking high school seniors specifically, or first year college students, to give us their story, to share their story with us, up to 1,000 words, and to do it in Spanish. And some people are kind of turned off, say, well, I don't speak Spanish. How do I go about that? We don't care whether you speak the language or not. I think it's incredible to speak more than one language. I think it helps your brain, and it frankly opens you to the possibility of having a much wider audience. But if you don't speak the language, you can always use Google Translate. Share your story with us in whatever language. Go, you know, use Google Translate to put it in Spanish, and send it to us to our foundation's webpage, which is a lot, you know, accepting those stories right now and for the rest of the month. And basically from 100 stories that we're going to be accepting, we're going to pick 10 stories in-house, and then celebrity judges will go through those 10 and pick out the four that they like the most. And the first prize will receive $10,000 for their college education. Second prize will receive $5,000, and we'll have a couple of third prizes of $2,500 each. So pretty basic, pretty straightforward. We're not concerned with the color of your skin, where you come from, or anything. We just want to encourage you and inspire you to inspire us with your own story.
Sure. That sounds fantastic. Remind me again of the name of this, and where could people find this online if they were to search?
So if you want to go submit your story, you can just go to the foundation's webpage, which is SergioCGarciaFoundation.com. And it has a tab where you can just submit your story. It'll ask you for your basic contact information, name, phone number, and then you can submit it in a PDF or a Word document. And you'll be automatically entered. And at this point, we have like 17 stories. So there's still about 83 spots available for the remainder of the month. You know, the odds of winning are really good. They're much better than the lottery.
That sounds like a great campaign. And, you know, obviously very compassionate and an honorable program to be running. I think you've done well with this. I look forward to following the story and learning more. So back a little bit to your law practice, are you currently working with any other people in Mexico to help them, or I should say people here in America, to become documented? Are you working in that direction at all?
So we don't do that. And the reason why I don't do immigration is because, as I mentioned to you, it took 21 years for me to be able to adjust my status, and it took another four to be able to for me to become a citizen. Luckily, I became a U.S. citizen 2 years ago June 20th of 2019. And so that's an incredibly long period of time to be waiting. And I just don't have the patience. I could not tell my client, yes, I'll help you with your immigration status, but you're going to have to be patient and wait 20 plus years. I couldn't do it. So that's not something I do. I try to support people who want to get their DACA paperwork. And just for your listeners, Trevor, DACA is a program that Barack Obama instituted back in 2012, which allows students to get like a work permit and a social security card, and they have to renew it every 2 years. So we help them with that if they want our help with something like that. But we don't focus on immigration because I just don't have the patience for that.
Understandable, and that's very understandable. But it seems that, again, it just seems that somebody in your position might be able to help change the laws. How do you go about changing the law so that it doesn't take 20 years for somebody to be documented? How do we get to the lawmakers? Or maybe you become governor one day, or have you considered changing things from the inside?
Yeah,
or looking at that?
Politics is something that I often flirt with the idea, and I do, that would be my ultimate dream to one day govern California. But unfortunately, Trevor, we're in a day and age where even that is frankly, it's hazardous to my health. And I can tell you that from personal experience, not only to my health, but to my family's safety and stuff, because even trying to become licensed, I was unfortunately the victim of a lot of hate and a lot of threats against my life and against my family's life. So that's now that I'm married and have a family, it's difficult to make that unilateral decision and expose, you know, my family in the process, just because that's my dream. While I would love to be able to do it from the inside, I think I'll have to maybe do some lobbying of the people in power, or, you know, at least try to encourage those in power to do make some changes. But Congress has been working on this immigration reform for decades, and unfortunately has not been able to resolve anything. So it's a difficult one. It's a controversial issue, and it's a tough one.
I am very sorry to hear about that experience and those experiences that you went through and that your family went through. That is unfortunate, and it seems that this kind of stuff moves glacier speed and sometimes even slower. I do hope this can, you know, speed along and proceed a little faster, and maybe make it easier for others in the future, because clearly there's a lot of will, a lot of desire, and like yourself, bring a lot to the country and to the system when you do make that leap to documented status and become a great citizen of the U.S. Congratulations on all of your success.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And I think a lot of the times, Trevor, we're just afraid of what we don't understand, or anything that's different, anybody who doesn't look like us, anybody who has an accent, or, you know, we're just not, sometimes not very open-minded. And I always thought that, you know, just give me a chance, get to know me, and you'll realize that I'm not here to, you know, destroy anything, harm anybody. I'm just here to work hard and make my dream a reality just as much as you're trying to make yours. And, talking about politics, I was actually dusting off a letter that I wrote back on September 10, 2014, to then Governor Brown, supporting another piece of legislature, SB 1159, which ultimately became law. And that allows professionals to be licensed independently of their status, And so a lot of people are probably thinking, well, that's not good. That's going to be more people competing for a job. And maybe so, but I have always encouraged competition. I'm not afraid of it. And the positive side of that, and I can tell you from personal experience, is that prior to being licensed as an attorney, the most I ever paid in taxes, Trevor, was $800. And I remember, because it was a lot of money to me back then. And I can tell you this year, my firm will probably be paying about $1 million in taxes. So, I mean, basically unchaining our hands, allowing us to work to our full potential, has a great benefit to society in general. And we're here to contribute, we're here to stimulate the economy, and we're here to be community builders and supporters. We're not here to harm anybody or or take anything away from anybody. We actually, like I said, we open up employment opportunities, we contribute in taxes, we donate, we're here to help.
Sergio, obviously this country was born upon immigration. All the immigrants from Italy, Spain, Europe, we made this country what it is. It is nothing if not that. And you are an example, a fine example of what you're discussing. And I know that there is that kind of mind out there that seems to be threatened by this, even though their grandparents and great-grandparents were at one time from somewhere else and came here for a better life. It's a very old trope, but unfortunately we're still in this situation where people like yourself still face violent opposition for, well, ignorance and hatred. It's a shame. A little bit more about the book that you wrote. I didn't know that you had written a book. I know I am jumping subjects here just a little bit, but in the last couple minutes that we have, I'd like to know about the book and what is the topic and where is it at and what's the name?
Oh, sure. Yeah, back when I was 22, I actually wrote a book. I used to work in a grocery store, and I used to interact with a lot of people, and especially older folks. And I always was intrigued by romance and relationships and whatnot. And so at that age, I wrote a book called Love, Sex, and Romance. You know, it was something for me to do. And I really enjoyed it because it came out for Valentine's Day, and all my customers were extremely kind to me. They would buy a copy of the book, have me sign it for them, and then they would, you know, help me out with $15, $20, whatever they wanted. And that allowed me to actually get into law school. And then about 3 years ago, I finally published my autobiography, just Undocumented Lawyer. That one I published privately. So basically, to get a copy of that, maybe in the next few months we'll make it available, but currently it's just privately. I have it. If anybody wants a copy, they reach out to me and I get them a copy. But that's just my life story and everything I went through, especially for those 5 years battling to become the first undocumented attorney in this great nation.
Yeah, that sounds like, obviously, that sounds like a bestseller potentially, and, you know, maybe a movie someday too, because I think it is a like I said, a very unique story and a groundbreaking in your own right. In the last couple minutes, what do you do when you're not, you know, out there fighting for justice?
Also, like to travel the world, Trevor. You know, being undocumented, that kind of cuts your wings, and you can leave the country, but you cannot come back. So now that I'm blessed to be a United States citizen and proud of that, I try to travel all over the world to carry on like missionary type work. And also to enjoy the different cultures. My wife and I travel once a year, and we try to go for 2 weeks. And we use 1 week to enjoy life and try to get away from work, and another week to help in different countries that are facing challenges. You know, we've been to Mexico, we've been to Cambodia, we've been to Cuba, we've been to a lot of different spots in the world that are, you know, just not doing as well as we are here, even though the United States has a lot of challenges right now. I think once you travel outside our country, you realize how blessed we are, and you're always excited to come back.
Absolutely. Sergio Garcia, thank you so much for your time, for joining me on the program today. I really enjoyed speaking with you and hearing your story.
I really appreciate your invitation, and hopefully look forward to talking to you in the future. And the book should be out shortly in the next couple months, the Spanish version. And if you're interested in the English version, Undocumented Lawyers available anytime. Just reach out to me and I'll get you a copy.
Thank you once again. Good night.
Good night.
Past episodes of the program can be found wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode each week. Thank you to the letter J. Cody Robertson for his original music. I'm Trevor Collins, and I can be reached, Trevor, at timeslikenow.com. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to speaking with you all next time.
Outsider's Corner on Art Focus. My name is Aurora Josephson. Gregory Mackenzie Grennan was born in Detroit, Michigan on May 8, 1948. A true son of Motown, he loved the music and he loved the Detroit Tigers from the time he was a boy. He attended the Center for Creative Studies in Detroit, got a scholarship to attend Oxbow, but other than that remained an unschooled outsider. He began making art in the early 1970s in Detroit's Cass Corridor. Gregory then moved to Chicago, where he worked at Landfall Press, and his lifelong love for printmaking was nurtured and grew up. He then moved to Portland, Oregon in the mid-1970s.